he's known in our group as his moniker is, and I love it, is Matt, not a doormat. And I've gotten to know Matt pretty well over the last, I'd say probably really well over the last 2 years, but I kind of knew and saw him sort of come in, and you know, we became fast friends in program and shared a sponsor for a while, and then our recovery paths completely intertwined in such a neat little way. And the thing that I think is really amazing about Matt is just to get a sense, a little bit of a sense for who he is. He's the kind of guy that just incredibly creative and open-minded, and you would think those were his greatest skills, but actually his greatest, the thing that I love about him the most is his ability to continually reach out and stay connected. That's just, I think, an amazing skill. It's one that, you know, I want to possess someday when I grow up too. You know, no more isolating for Eric. And guys like him really, really helped me to understand the importance and the need for, and the fun that you can have in really forging really awesome kinds of fellowship and keeping those bonds really tight and that unity tight in program. So that being said, I'll step down and turn the time over now to our speaker, Matt Nutadorn.
Thank you, Eric. Should hire you whenever I feel bad. call it like a boost, like a shot of vitamin goodness. I'm Matt, and I'm not a doormat, and I don't know when that started, but it's kind of become who I am, and I like typing it. Makes me feel consistent. And Eric, I love you, and thank you for asking me to share. I like that verb, share, because that's all I can do is share. Share from the heart, because like literature says, that's how we get better around here. So I'm going to try to make that my compass point today, and then recalibrate and vector when I get lost back to that. Because I spent a long time trying to be perfect, and it's tiring. It's just exhausting. It's just so exhausting, and I got tired of that somewhere along the way. I'm just touched by many things tonight. First of all, the birthdays and our new secretary, all the celebrants. Dave, thank you for your service over the course of the last, I don't think you knew what you were signing up for. But I, for one, am very grateful. And I don't think there's any accident that you got to be that guy. I'm going to try to skirt around outside issues and still speak to something that I think is really important. And but what I love about this meeting in particular, and why it's such an honor to be asked to share here, and there's that verb again, share, is that this meeting, like no other meeting for me, is we've heard it said, like it's different, it's the thing, it's like the best, whatever. I'm not going to qualify or quantify. So I just started asking myself, like, why does this matter so much to me and now in this time we're living in? And I think it's because it's the single most diverse group of men I've ever met in every capacity. And I've never been in a place, and I've traveled every road across this fucking country. I've had so many different experiences. I have 40 minutes, I can't sum it all up. But I've never encountered the amount of diversity that we have in our meeting. True diversity that I don't think can happen by any other coincidence than God and geography. And that's like every expression, every expression of every expression you can think of is here. And I take great comfort in that. So when God feels far sometimes, if I can trek to Thursday night and know that other people might have crossed the mountain or come up from South Bay or whatnot. And it's like, you know, I remember reading this book a long time ago when I was like seeking, because I've always sought, you know. I was reading Black Elk Speaks, and he was talking about how like God was on the mountain, like right next to him, you know? And it's like, and it's a true statement, you know, for me, because it's like, it's right there, and we get there. And I'm asking myself, why does this meeting matter so much? And maybe, like I said, it's because of the times we're living in and so much, but like, I've never, so many things in my life have just been taken care of by simply showing up to Thursday night, listening, learning to listen, learning that I didn't know how to listen, learning how to listen, and then having the courage to share. I had to overcome so many fears to do that. And one of them was I didn't feel like it was my place, for outside reasons, that I felt like I was less of a member because of other things that I'm involved in, and that I shouldn't share. And so that was one of the things I had to overcome. But at first I just, and I never encountered a place for me where like true unconditional love existed. And we need more of that in our world today. And it's incumbent upon me, because I'm tapped into this, is to try to bring this into my life, right? Which is, I guess, what I've learned to do around here somehow. Not by any action, because every time I feel like I gotta do something, I usually realize I don't. I just have to do the opposite, which is like boggles my mind, because I'm like this son of an Irish foreman, Union, Southside, Chicago, generational, like I have to do, right? And if you're not doing, you're you know, there's the hard drinking. And I you know, through being around here and doing the work with Eric, which I'll get into, you know, I got to understand my story, you know, and what a value that is to know my story, because then it just becomes my story that I can take out every once in a while, and it doesn't run my life like it used to. And I don't know when that stopped, but it has. And I take it out when it's of use to be of service to others. And the fact that I have that choice today is nothing short of a miracle. Nothing short of one. And I think the miracle of it all is how common it is, you know, and how long it took me to find how common that is. But I guess this is the way it is. I remember when I first asked David Kay, who was my first sponsor in Al-Anon, and this is 4 years ago, and I took about 10 months to ask him to be my sponsor, and he said, it's not a record around here. And I remember it, my shoulders dropped, because I knew I think everything, anytime I'd been honest in my life, I was met with shame. I was met with some not good enoughness. So I think to hear that, and then hear that with humor, but without being at the expense of that, made me feel safe, made me feel welcome. And I think that's all we do around here, is try to make each other welcome. Like when I really can quiet the brain, like, you know, Jita was talking about, like that gets in there, and if I can get it quiet, I can hear that. That's kind of all I'm asked to do, is to just extend the welcome. And so that's all I'm gonna try to do. And this is all my experience and my only opinions. I'm gonna try to stick to my experience. And so if you don't hear something you like, please go to another one. They're pretty easy to attend now. The only obstacle is yourself, which can be pretty big sometimes. But I when I first came here, I didn't know how deeply affected by alcoholism I was. I was going through photos the other day, and actually putting them in a photo album. I've been trying to take advantage of this time that we're living in and keep my like keep the focus on what I can control, right? And when I do that, I find a lot of joy, a tremendous amount of joy in such simple little things during this time we're living in, right? And like I was putting photos in, and I when my grandmother died 2 years ago, and my mom died a year ago, like I pilfered some photos and some really good ones, and some of those old thickies, you know, they're like cardboard, and I put some of them away, and I was looking at them yesterday, and I was looking at one of the great great grandmothers whose name is scrawled in the back by my grandmother Eileen, and she's this big, huge, you know, barrel chested Irish, lace curtain Irish woman. Which for those of you who aren't Irish is, you know, there's the doily lace curtain is like, you know, we're not the shanty Irish. My family, the terror of the alcoholic Irish family, American family, is that you're going to be accused of being shanty Irish, you know? And so she was all done up in that like 1918 look. And I know her story. Like I knew that like she had raised her father, her uncles, you know, she was the kid and like all these, and this is like four generations ago. And like the disease, not runs in my family. It gallops in my family and, in every aspect of it. And like, I could see it. I saw it in the photo and I was looking through some things and I was affected by this before I was born. And these are things I didn't know until I started doing the work around here, of course. I came in here because I was in a relationship that wasn't even a relationship, but I was trying to make it a relationship, you know what I mean? It was not a relationship. It was not based on mutual understanding, love, and I was in a... It was a bad situation, and I was making it worse, and didn't know it. And it was, if only she, right? Fill in the blank. You know, if only she would not threaten, how can I try to dodge and get her off the floor so she wouldn't kill herself? And I don't live like that today. But I thought that was it. I thought it was like, that was the thing. And I'm like, no, I've been affected by this all my life, right? And I grew up in a home that was riddled with confusion and chaos and some people trying not to drink and then occasionally drinking. That would be my father and my mother, who were both periodics when I was around. They weren't periodics before I was around. I let their experience be theirs. I'm the youngest of five brothers, and all of us have had our own fair share of trouble in one way or another. I think four out of five are out of trouble right now, about 4.5 to be, so that's a pretty good thing for an Irish family. Which is another miracle to begin with. I have some brothers that are in recovery, and that's really wonderful. And I'm the youngest, so everything I had was like the hand-me-down. I was the, it felt like a bomb had dropped before I was born, and there were all these secrets buried in this crater that we lived in, and I didn't know where any of them were, and then occasionally I would step on something. Like I, for example, didn't know I had a brother named Jim until who I guess was my he was my godfather, and I didn't know I had a brother until he showed up one day on a Christmas party, and he was I think he was strung out on but at that point it was freebase cocaine, right? And I think he stormed in during a Christmas Eve, and it was already some chaos going on. And I had my little G.I. Joe, like, airplane thing that I was playing around with. And my brother storms in. I remember there was a bunch of chaos, and he comes running in. And my dad had tried to get him out. And I had no idea who this guy was. And it was my brother Jim. And he just wanted to give me his birthday card because it's the well-intended alcoholic, you know? And I understand it. I grew up around it. And he was doing the right thing in totally the wrong way. And he just wanted to give me a gift. And it was a Christmas card with a lottery ticket in it, and I was six or five or something. I don't know about you, but memory is really blurred for good reasons a lot of times, because there was a lot of capital T trauma that I grew up around. So a lot of it's just this behind this wall that is okay. And denial, I've heard around here, is a cushion against the natural shock of trauma. And there was a lot of that, and not just mine, everybody. It was just this, you know, thing. But I remembered he really wanted to get me this lottery ticket, and he was screaming, good luck with this thing, good luck with this thing, good luck with this thing, and then he left. And I remember it was one of the, like, a marking experience in my youth. And I didn't know I had a brother. And then later on, I found out what that thing was that he talked about that affected so many of us in our family. And I remember hearing a story when, because there's something really fun about homes and families, because this is a family disease that we're affected by alcoholism like ours, the 21andMe or any of those Ancestry.com is really great. It's a really fun thing to do for us, for alcoholic families. And I remember we got one for my mom many years ago. My brother was a gift for Christmas, and we had looked up at all these documents. We had found all this stuff. We found, like, how many people had been committed in different generations, and we heard about that friend, that relative I showed up about the photo, who raised her uncles and all these adults, even though she was a kid, and they were all digging the IC canal in Ohio and Indiana, and they were immigrants, and then we heard about how my mom, my grandmother, and my grandfather had divorced and married 3 times. And none of us had any idea, right? It's all those secrets, you know, those secrets that are buried in that crater. And then, because in my house, when I grew up, there were these two things, besides the chaos and confusion, there was this, then all of a sudden there was this vent. It was like humidity. I grew up in the Midwest, right, in Chicago. And so in the summer, there's this humidity that just rises and then it pops and you can feel that thunderstorm. And the house that I grew up in, it was like that. And because there's nothing more sad than watching an alcoholic try not to drink. And growing up around that, like, you almost want to give it, right? And I did all those things, like, feel overly responsible. I felt, like, I learned by doing this work that I felt that over sense of responsibility. I felt I was the peacemaker, being the youngest. I played the clown. I used the victim thing, tried to get attention. All those things that we do in the first step, that when we list them all out, and then find out when we sit across the table that, you know, I'm not alone in that, you know, that that's not an original list, you know. But I remember when we did this and we found out about my grandmother and my grandfather, she had evidently said to my grandfather, my grandmother Agnes, that if he had given up the drinking or the gambling, that she would bring him back, right? And I always thought that was kind of funny because it was the choice, right? You know, she knew she couldn't handle it both. And so I grew up where, like, you know, my dad would take me to the horse track, was a regular thing. And not the fancy Arlington racetrack. We'd go to Balmoral, which was this, the trotters. My dad would go, yeah, we're gonna hang out with a bunch of degenerates, you know? And I learned to handicap horses at a young age. And I felt that tremendous sense of needing to make the peace at a young age, you know, I felt like this ancient 6-year-old, you know, I felt like this ancient 9-year-old. And I felt that way a long ways, into my recovery, you know. When I first came in here, I knew a lot more. I knew a lot less today, and I'm a hell of a lot happier. And even though I had spent so much time thinking about me, I knew so little about who I was. And even though I knew I spent so much time thinking about me, I had not the stamina to look at myself. And those are things that I've learned around here. And the dividends from that are I'm experiencing in my life. And I like them. And I like the dividends. And it keeps me doing this. So when I got asked to share, I mean, just to, and during this time, because it's such a time of reflection, it's and not morbid reflection, but like real reflection. It was been such an opportunity. And I remember when Eric asked me a while back in April to do this, I had been sick with, a couple of weeks with let's just call them COVID-like symptoms. And it was scary. It was terrifying. It was the most frightening time I'd ever had in my life. And there was a couple of guys in this room who just, they were experts in fear. And I didn't need to tell 100 people. I just needed a couple, man. I just needed a couple. And I'm so grateful for that. So anything I can do to give back to this meeting is a gift. One of the first things I did in my own recovery was I just got busy with, because that's what my esteem was based on. Like, I had to have some worth, you know? So I had that false belief that if I didn't do something, I wasn't worthy of love, right? Because there wasn't enough to go around where I grew up. You know, we were in a desert, and there was only so much love. And we would do whatever you could fight for it. I've come to understand a lot about my brothers and our behavior and the way we competed and how many holes there were in the walls when we had to move, either from my head or from somebody's body or whatnot. You know, there just wasn't enough love around. And that's nobody's fault. Nobody knew. They didn't have the tools. How could they? How could they? When I started to understand how my father was raised, how could he possibly have those tools? When I started to really understand my mom's mom and their relationship and all of that, how could they? So when I got into Al-Anon, I needed to get busy because, and those are some of my character defects that we practice for a living, right? You know, it's like, I had to do something because I felt they would kick me out. And that's how sick I was. I did literature but what's cool is like, is my higher power is like, I can work with that, you know? That's a language Eric and I use all the time when we talk, and he taught me that phrase, like, God, my understanding of God, and I only use that word because I can't come up with a better one, can work with anything, man. It can work with, like, it can split a match three ways, my higher power is so intensely personal, and I still don't understand it, nor do I have to, and I'm okay with that. I just know that when I came in here, it was merit-based. It was fear-based. I needed to be perfect. I needed to earn. It was a value system. I was living on a... It was kind of like being in a seesaw as a kid. You know those things in parks where you go this way? And I feel like a lot of my relationships in my life were so one-sided. I was like stuck up in the air, you know, stuck that way. And again, how could I? I didn't know. I hadn't done the work. I hadn't. How could I possibly be available? How could I? When we talk about how special this meeting is, it's like, because the men in this room and then this meeting, because we get to be with everyone, with families, with people who maybe don't even go to Al-Anon, but support people who are in Al-Anon, like, we get to open our doors up. And in this time, open our doors is important, you know, it keeps the air fresh, you know? This is a time where we need our doors open, we need that air. But I learned so much, and I didn't know it. That's the miracle of all of this, by coming on Thursdays and doing a little bit of work and learning to be patient, learning to just sit there, and it is the miracle. And it defies my understanding. And I like to think I'm a pretty smart dude, and I'm not, and I'm okay with that. These are things, and none of these things I knew. When I came in here, I was just trying to get her back, you know? And thank God for all the things that I've received in this program, all the things that have been taken away, and all that's been left, you know? How this thing's not a straight line. And, you know, today I don't live a way where my love is based on achievement. And just to speak about why that was that way, you know, I the way I grew up, about chaos and confusion and all that stuff, like, I, and feeling that it was up to me, right? It's a really the fear, like I wouldn't sleep at night. I have night terrors, and they thought I was epileptic for a while because I would shake at night, and I couldn't sleep. And I was like, and they put me like sleep studies, and I had the experience of being sexually abused as a young 6, 7, 8 year old. It's hard to say by a member of the clergy that was trusted to look after our family. And I did the work around here that helped me really unearth that. And I only share that because a lot of people may have trouble with forgiveness. A lot of people may have trouble with an understanding of a higher power around here. And I like to bring that up because, you know, spiritual rape, which is what that was, at a young age, is affected so much of my life, and so much I didn't even know it, right? But like today, it doesn't. And again, I've done so many different things to help with all that. I acted out with all so many different ways, and I but all I had to do was come here and sit down and let another man know my story and hear theirs. And it just floors me. It just floors me in so many ways. But I bring that up because if you have a problem with some form of a higher power or goodness or whatever you want it to be, like, not up to me. I just want that to be an example that, like, if I can overcome that and develop a relationship with a higher power, then I want that to encourage you. And that's all I'll say on the subject. When I was 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14 years old and all that stuff, I knew I needed to get out of that house for my own survival. And I did. I said, well, I better get out of here. And I know I'm on my own. It's up to me. And so I went, and I got very successful at an extremely young age in a chosen field, and experienced all the pitfalls of that. And in a lot of ways, it saved me. It got me out. It got me out. And I'm so grateful for it today, you know. But I had to, and that's a world within itself that is riddled with a lot of us and a lot of the ones we love. So it was like jumping from the frying pan into the fire. So again, when I came in here, I thought I was just coming in here to fix a relationship that wasn't really a relationship. And what I was understanding was that I was getting free. I was making myself available. I was giving space for something to come in, for a real change to occur within me, you know. I jumped into that field and which was really great because it got me out of that house. But if I could just share a couple more things about some of the things that the way alcoholism affected me, because when I came in here, I only had the feeling. And which was like this slash of doom, dread. It was the feeling, you know. It was like I couldn't name it. And when by being around here and listening and just, you know, doing some writing and doing a lot of the things, I got to experience the all my feelings, you know. But when I grew up, you know, I would sit at the typewriter when I was a really young kid, and it didn't even have any ink. It would have like a little bit of red ink in it, and I'd write stories. You know, I'd sit in the utility room and close the door, protect myself from the chaos and the cabinet slamming, and I'd draw maps of an island, and I love maps to this day. And it was like it's like literally my comfort. My first drug was escape and maps, and like literally drawing islands. And then I would go to the typewriter and I'd type up the story that I that I come up with my own imagination, right? Because that's where I escape to. And I type up on a typewriter. I was six and seven, you know, and I'd zip it out of the typewriter and I'd hand it over to my mom, and she'd like mark it up with a red pen. And all I wanted was for her to tell me, "Yo, that's great, honey. Wow, look at this." And instead I had my grammar fixed. And I didn't know how that was in the way of so much of my life in my 20s and 30s and 40s. I didn't know how much weight I'd given that. I didn't know how much weight I had given the terror of playing catch with my father and just being so scared about him and my brother that, like, I couldn't help it. Like, I knew when I threw the ball that, like, I just knew I was going to throw it over his head. I was going to throw it down the block, and he was going to give me the look, and I was going to get, like, just cut. And I couldn't stop it. And like, living life with that terror was not... That's how I came into Al-Anon. Like, I didn't know it, but, like, that was in me. Like, there's a friend of ours in this room whose face I'm seeing in front of me, that it lives in the body, man. It lives in the body. And it's weird how when we open our mouths and when we open our ears, it kind of gets out of the body a little bit. And less, more and more. And so, yeah. These are, and if you would have told me 4 years ago that, like, knowing these things, letting go of these things was a gift, I'd be like, you're kidding me, right? But it is. It's absolutely a gift, you know. And these experiences, man, they make me who I am. All the things, you know. I like today, I love who I am today. And that was not the case. And again, how does that happen? All I had to do was stop trying to make it happen. That's the conundrum of this whole thing. And I remembered, like, how when I came into Al-Anon and my stomach was so upset from the anxiety I was in, that I had to go to an acupuncturist because my body was so riddled. I was like, I just wasn't, let's say I wasn't, my daily, I wasn't taking good care of myself. And my shoulders were just a mess, you know? My body was just a mess. I was a lot older than I am today. And, yeah. And I was forcing solutions. And it's really tiring to try to force solutions. And to not even know that I was forcing solutions. That's the weird thing around here, is until I came in here, I didn't even have the language for it. You know, I didn't know, how could I, you know? No wonder I had, like, had a couple of false starts on Thursdays for a couple of times for, like, 10 years before. Because it was scary, because there's so much truth and love in this particular room, right? And then when I had asked that night, when I had asked that first sponsor of mine to be my sponsor, and he said it wasn't a record, and we got to work, and we did the work, and we did the first steps, and I got to see how many ways I tried to control, and I learned that I wasn't alone. And we would meet at diners, and you'd have these huge deli sandwiches, and we had fun, and and I felt safe. And enough to do the inventory work, and which is in a shelf over there because I save just in case I need when I sponsor and if I need it to bring it out, right? But man, I had written so much down. And I mean, I think it was 5 legal pads. I think it was a lot. It was a lot of stuff. And I look at it now sometimes, once in a while, and I just see, for all of that, I still on my own, left to my own devices and my own power, I can't get at it alone. I can't touch the thing I need. You know, we heard it said around one night on Thursday around here, and out of respect for an individual, I won't say who it was, but he said he was a failed god. and you know, how can we, you know, I can't touch this stuff. I left to my own devices. I'll write all these legal pads of stuff, and it still won't touch it, the thing, you know? I'll over-report the unimportant, and I'll under-report the really important. I can't do any of this without the step before it and the step after. And that stuff just makes me feel secure in the world, man. Like, and today, in the times we're living in, that's a big deal. Like, I'm okay in the adventure of it all. I was terrified. You've heard a little bit. Like, I was riddled with fear, and I grew up around it. And, like, I grew up in a house of fear, you know, and I was terrified of the unknown, you know. And now, like, it's most of the time an adventure. And when it's not, like Eric says, like, I think I know what to do in order to kind of do a few things in order to try to right my boat, you know. Eric and I use the language of, it's not the proximity to my higher power that's important. It's my orientation. And, you know, you can have the biggest sail in the world, but if it ain't right, rigged, jigged the right way, you're not going to go anywhere. And I remember when I first heard that image, I felt like my head just popped out of my ass. And it was that perspective shift we talk about around here. And I can't get at it on my own. You know, I want to, but I can't. And I remember how comforting it was to hear, like, that I suffered from the same thing that somebody else suffered from, which was lack of faith. And that that when I would come up with, like, a bunch of problems, I would hear that, like, oh, maybe my main issue is that, like, I believe the delusion that all the answers are up to me. And I still do that sometimes. And that's my go-to. But like I said, I kind of know, it's like, you know, now there's enough scaffolding built in my life, I think, that, like, you know, if I fell a little bit, that there's, like, when you're building an elevator shaft, you build up the little thing, so you only fall a little bit, right? You don't go all the way down. And little bit by little bit. I like to climb mountains, and I like to do mountaineering and things like that. I don't climb, but I like to hike, and I like to do things every year. I try to do something a little out of my comfort zone, and there's a term about going slowly. You know, if you're going to climb, you go slow, right? Not too slow, but you go slow and steady, right? And there's a term, and I think it's in Swahili, where it's like pole pole, and it means you know, slowly, and that same term. Those are the porters that help you climb Kilimanjaro. They use that phrase in an entirely different language when you climb up in the Himalayas, and capital S Sherpas and the little S Sherpas. They use a phrase that I think is Bishu Bishu or something, Bisu Bisu, and it means slowly. And like that image to this guy is huge, because I don't do that on my own, man. My ism lives in the total opposite of slowly. And I'm so grateful that I have a sponsor that understands that about me today and knows how to listen. Like, I didn't really realize, like, I didn't feel heard ever, like, really, until I came in. And what I love about what we do is we hear each other and then we share. How healing that is, if you're new or if you're around here and or you're hiding here like I did for a while. Oh man, just being able to, I didn't even trust that this shit would work, you know, and that was still okay. It still worked, right? And it still works. And if I could just share a couple of things in my journey too, that have just earmarked some milestones. Was I went around about a year and a half into my recovery, a guy who I was working with, I just, for his own reasons, stopped coming to our meetings and kind of vanished. And it was, and it pushed a lot of my abandonment issues and a lot of my, there you go, see, there you go again. And all that script shit. And I felt, and I was slipping into like, and I knew enough to know that I needed to find another guy. And I was sitting on a four-step. I was in the middle of my collection of, you know, legal pads. And I was friends with Eric. And we would do this this little visual thing we always did at the time. We played a little guitar. And it was the world's tiniest little guitar, the wah-wah pedal. It was this visual, and it would just make us laugh. And the story of what that is, I'll keep between us. And I remember, like, I was like, this guy, he's kind. And my first thought was I needed to find somebody who could be like a drill sergeant with this. And I was like, no, I think I need some kindness. And I was already standing. We were standing next to each other. And I had asked him if he would be my sponsor. And he said the thing we say around here, which was that, it would be my honor. And we just plugged right along. And ever since then, you know, that terrible ache, that terrible loneliness, just hasn't been here. It's not because of him. That's different. That's just sponsorship. There's together, I think, I just don't feel alone anymore. I don't feel separate and apart from. I don't feel above or below most of the time. You know, I joke around that doormat thing, but I remind, because I spent a lot of my life not speaking up, not advocating for, not just not being authentic out of fear. Because I suffered from the delusion that I was alone. And that's not the case today. And that that is a another one of those minor miracles where God chooses to remain anonymous. And when I pause and think, which I think this time is really, I think, I'm sure I'm not alone in this. When we have this time that we're in right now, where we're reevaluating, you know, where I am, looking at what's really important, what's essential, what matters, and like, it's not what I thought it was just a little while ago. To not have to achieve, to feel worthy of love, is a tremendously freeing thing, man. It's a tremendously freeing thing that I didn't even know I suffered from. And here's the cool thing about it all, because I do things that bring me a lot of joy and that I hope bring joy in others and are creative or whatnot, but like, it actually frees me up to be better at my job, where I can be of more service. It absolutely helps me trust what I have to say and what matters. I don't have to fight for that little bit of love anymore. I don't have to pack it all in because I'm in the middle seat in the back, you know, and everybody's yelling at each other. And I just want to share that something cool happened today and I'm not being told to shut up, you know. I don't have to live with that terror of anymore. And it's entirely liberating. And I did not know that that's what I would get from being around here. I just wanted to help the drinkers in my life, you know. Which there were so many of, you know. It's like, I had no idea, you know. The trick was on me. And it's just... to be able to sit still and let go is a tremendous value. It boggles my mind. Because from that place, I get to really be of use. And I think ultimately, this is the fun thing about our character defects, is I like to be of use. And today, I think that's in proportion. Around here, I had to sit still, and part of my life is I'm a pretty engaged dude, and I'm a scrappy little Irish guy. And I think for a while, I didn't know what to do about things that were beyond my control. And there's a lot of that today. And I'm starting, and I would use my disease and my so-called recovery as an excuse that I couldn't do certain things that were within my power, that brought me more peace, serenity, and joy, made me feel like I was doing something. And it's funny how it does all come from this stuff. Like sitting down with Al-Anon literature and just opening a page of how Al-Anon works. Just literally a page, a paragraph, and really chewing on it. It's crazy how much one can get out of that. Thank God, thank goodness that like this thing is so big, it's so vast that like we can't outthink our way out of this. You know, I can't graduate because I know me. I can find a way to find a loophole, you know? But the more I look, the more I study, the more I realize it's like, it's just unfathomable. I take comfort in that. I take comfort in that. And now, like in this time, it helps me lower the bar, you know? It helps me lower the bar because we're living in this time where my capacity, which again, like my sense of worth was based on my output, right? And so I'm living in a time where my capacity is limited, you know? But of course I'm still doing a bunch of shit, but so I have to hand crank down the bar, because left to my own devices, I'll set it high so I could feel bad about myself and get that little kick, you know, to repeat that story out of habit. And so I want to consciously lower the bar for myself and others, man, because we're all doing the best we can here. Everybody's doing the best we can. And it's funny because it kind of easier to apply that having digested some of that in my own family and in my own story and looking at my brothers and having a relationship with the alcoholics in my life based on neutrality however that's possible, like being able to approach this disease of COVID time, whatever, and like filling in the blank, like you could almost fill it all in, you know? It's like I can approach this time with the same understanding. You know, what can I do? What is within my hula hoop, you know? And then I'm able to like find the serenity and the joy in the day. I'll never forget, and it's almost a year ago now when my mom died. I was back home and I got to be there. I got to really be there for a few weeks with my mom when she was sick, and I got to really be the son. And I was clean. I got to say I love you. I got to say I'm sorry. I got to say thank you. I got to say goodbye. All the big things. And then I got to come back and let my other brothers have the same experience and not be the go-to everything. That was unbelievable. It was unbelievable. And I remember when I was home, and the way coincidences line up, you know, I was about a year out of a relationship or 6 months or something like that, or I think it was like a year. I think it had ended like a year before. and I was in a relationship with a woman who just she was safe. She was like the total opposite of all the chaos that I'd gotten used to, and I needed to go the totally opposite direction, and I felt, and it was just not a good thing for me, and luckily that was gone, it was taken away, and I remember I was home, and I was with mom, and I left, and I was like, should I come back? I had this job, should I stay? Mom's kind of getting better, and I was like, nah, she would want me to do this teaching thing, and I went home, and I did it, and then I re-met somebody. Who's at a park right now, sitting with some friends, socially distanced, and might be walking in through the door any minute. And I'm in a real relationship today, and she's put her 30 days in, and we've been essentially moved in anyways. But it's like I haven't lived with someone in a long time, and these things all happen, and they wouldn't have happened had like these things lined up that were beyond my control. And I did not create any of it. I did not see any of it coming. I did not make it happen. None of that stuff. I just showed up. And so when I was home and I'm doing this stuff and then my mom gets sick again and I was up in Lake Tahoe at a bachelor party that I was running for a friend of mine. And that's when my mom died. And I was actually on Lake Tahoe Lake, which was one of her favorite places. Which was such, a coincidence, right? I'll never forget coming home here, and my very new girlfriend at the time had made this, like, soup. And I'd come home I'd left the key, and she just had it like waiting for me, and the way Eric answered those calls, and the way some of these guys in this room, when I went home for the funeral, and how much I didn't have to do any of that alone. If you would have told me those were gifts, I would have been like, nah, I want the other stuff, you know. But I got to really be there, and I got to not race home when I was home for the funeral, and then I got to stay with my dad for 2 weeks afterwards and just be there and not fix shit, let him be him. I was incapable of any of that, absolutely incapable of any of that. And I remember before I got home, Eric had said to me, hey kid, hey bud, I'm gonna try to do a little like Canadian there. He says, don't forget to have fun. Don't forget to have fun. And I was like, I wanted to say you know, and it's on our little, you know, note card that we put our just for today, you know, and like that idea of don't forget to have fun. And even on the day that we buried my mother, which was actually in an urn, I was laughing, and part of that is being in an Irish Catholic family, but was there grief? Absolutely. But there was moments that I was like, I was present. I was there. I didn't feel the need to be responsible for anybody else's feelings other than my own. But at the same time, I wasn't that opposite, which is like to totally close off, which without a program, I can totally do. You know, I can use walls as weapons. You know, I can use boundaries and use the tools of this program and weaponize them to stay miserable. And instead, I had like a screen door, you know? Instead, it was like being in the Midwest, you know, you grow up and that screen door, you know, to keep the mosquitoes out. And I can't make a screen door like that. Without this program, without the men, without my relationship with my sponsor, without studying Al-Anon literature, without doing the gratitude list. I started doing gratitude lists a while ago, and we'd send them to each other. And it was like something I do consistently, and I could tell when I'm not doing well. It's kind of like making my bed. If I don't make my bed for a few days in a row, then hey, I got to take my you know, I got to check myself, right? It's like one of those markers, because I can't see my own thing, right? And, but like just being able to do that, you know, and go, sorry, I got distracted, and I lost my train of thought. But like the gratitude things, if I miss a few days, then I know, maybe something's a little off. But with a couple years and 4 years in Al-Anon now, I don't use that as an excuse to beat myself up anymore. You know, I just take corrective measure, you know? And now when I hear criticism or constructive criticism about my work or any of that stuff, I take it way less personal, you know? I cannot do what I do out in the 23 hours of the day without every one of these tools, man. I can't have the life of the hobbies, the big life I've built for myself, the without this, you know. We just went to up to the mountains, and we went to where there were no people, and I, all that time where I studied maps, I got to learn all these great roads and not all the people go on, and you know, if there's a road that has some dots on it and it's got some curviness, I like it, you know. And we got to go camp, we got to get our hands dirty, and got to wash dishes in like a little bowl, you know, by a campfire, and chop wood, carry water, and man, was it just healing. It was so good to feel that, because we've all been cooped up, you know, and we're gonna do it again, you know. We're gonna try to sneak out, and we're gonna go up into Utah, and I've never been to Dinosaur National Monument and Yellowstone, so that's, I gotta go. You know, left to my own devices, I will sell myself short. I will grade my own scorecard, and I will be lacking. But by doing this stuff, which is kind of like not doing it, you know, just absorbing it, you know, I don't grade my scorecard, you know. And I need all these tools right now, because we're living in such a crazy time. And I take great comfort that our program and the foundation of our program and our sister program was born and built out of like troubled times, man, like Prohibition / World War I / Great Depression, Lost Generation, tough times. That this stuff is battle tested, that the experience that we have collectively is bigger than fucking COVID, is bigger than all this, and that allows me to have fun. Thank you, I see that. Jack, you have better handwriting than Eric, but that's really great. But he's from Canada, so we'll fault him on that one. I get a lot of me to have fun today, man. I was not having fun when I got in here. You know, I was not having fun. And I've had a lot of adventures since then. And I've got to finish things that I've started, and I've got to let go of some things that I've hung on to. But one of the things I think I'm most proud of is, you know, it's small things. It's making amends to myself, which I would have missed entirely were it not for the love of the soul of sponsorship. And, you know, I would have left myself off. I would have felt like I owed an amends to the world at large for the oxygen that I had used, right? And not feeling like I'd done enough with that gift that I should give some of it back, right? That's left to my own devices. But what I've learned by listening around here was that I got to I got to be easier on myself. I got to expect less of who, of me. That the answers weren't all up to me. That the fate of my family, the fate of any of that shit is just not, it's not on my shoulders. Things don't stick to me like Velcro anymore. And part of the way I make an amends to myself is to keep practicing the program of Al-Anon. And I love the phrase of, I have a program today. I may not use it, but I have it. Because there's been days where I haven't wanted to use it. And that's okay. And I've learned that around here, that like, the bar is really low. And that is, I can't. It's just mind-boggling to think that that exists. And it floors me, and it makes me so humble that, like, that is even achievable, you know, to be able to be free of that. That overdeveloped sense of obligation and responsibility. It's just crazy because it actually allows me and it frees me up where I can take real responsibility. And for that, I am beyond grateful. And I will keep trying to stay open and I'm going to keep trying to grow and learn around here. And I hope you guys and gals do the same. And I hope if you're having a hard day, you speak up because no matter how much time we have around here, these are hard times. And we're all in it together. So that's all I got. Thank you.